What can a person do if he mistakenly has done something that made the jinn angry? For example, cutting down a tree in which the jinns used to stay. And what do you do to prevent such a happening? Because nobody knows in advance that the jinns are staying around such a tree.
Well, as I said, the effect, I mean, what is going to come from the world of the jinn in terms of affliction to us, what is coming is coming. No matter what you do, you cannot stop it. If Allah is destined for it to happen to you, it is going to happen to you. I mean, there are some things, the general advice that we're told to avoid, which is, pouring hot water down holes and urinating in holes and, in the ground or etc. You know, we may find them in, if we're out hunting or whatever. We want to use the bathroom, there are no toilets, so you just find a hole someplace. So maybe it looks like a rabbit's hole or whatever, urinate in a hole. No. No, you should not do that. We're instructed not to do that. But other than that, I mean, you have to carry on with your life. I mean, if there's a tree in your garden that needs to be cut down, you cut it down. You don't start worrying, is there a jinn in that tree? And, if I cut it down, you can't unless there's clear evidence to you that there is some area where the jinn are. Right? Then you have to carry on with your life as is and assume that the areas that you are in, the jinn are not. Yeah, seeking, the ta'weez and, the ta'awudh, that is the ta'awudh, the mu'awudhatan, utilizing them, and saying bismillah, before we do things, of importance. These are all among the things which help to protect us from harming others.
I have a request to announce the program coming up tomorrow, the time, the location, and topic, and I happen to have a flyer here concerning that. The topic tomorrow is Year 2000 Madness, Millennium Bug, Antichrist, and who knows what else. Don't enter the next millennium until you hear this terrific triple lecture. Arrive at 4 p.m. tomorrow. The lecture begins at 5 o'clock, and tomorrow we'll have more time to expand on the subject because we don't have the restrictions that we dealt with tonight. We're starting earlier, and we might finish a bit later. Well, no, we can't finish later, can we? It is going to be at the Glen Forest Secondary School. If you pick up a flyer like this one, you will see a map on there. The school is located two stops east of Dixie, south of Barnumthorpe on Field Gate Drive. For more information, call the Dawah Center sometime in the early afternoon tomorrow. Yes, and I really regret that I didn't say it earlier because we have more people here. On Tuesday night at the Dawah Center in Toronto, we're going to have an important lecture for sisters only. The speaker on that occasion will be Umm Isa, wife of Dr. Abu Amina Bilal Phillips. She's here traveling with him, and she will be speaking on the topic companionship. Companionship. So it should be a very important session for the sisters. Make sure you drop the sisters off and spend some time around. Maybe you can drop the sisters off, go to the Jama Mosque, and then come back to pick up the sisters. It'll be at 7 o'clock Tuesday evening. 7 o'clock. And by Maghrib, it'll be done. So you can come in and pray Maghrib and take the sisters home. Question. Can one tame jinns and then send the jinns to harm others? At the time of taking a jinn out of a person, can you make a negotiation with that jinn?
Okay, first and foremost, there is no taming of jinns. The jinns were submitted to Prophet Sulaiman. This is a miracle which was given to him, and it was given to him alone. None of the other prophets even had that ability. And Prophet Muhammad had also explained that on one occasion when a jinn had tried to destroy him, break his prayer, and how he had reached out in the prayer. The companions saw him reaching out, and he had subdued it in the sense that he had gotten it off himself, and he had thought to try to tie it up, in a pillar in the masjid so people would see it in the morning. And then he remembered, as he said, the dua of Prophet Sulaiman, that Allah give him a dominion which would not be given to anyone after him, and then he refrained from doing so because this was given to Prophet Sulaiman. So there is no taming of the jinn. People who are involved in acts with the jinn, involved in magic and things related to it, do so through sacrilege. Basically, they involve themselves in different sacrilegious acts, and then the jinn will enter into some kind of a contract with them. As long as they do these things, the jinn may do certain things for them. In terms of a jinn coming out of somebody and communicating with the Jin people have done it, but I warn people that any kind of communication which takes place with the Jin, or a Jin that claims to be possessing a particular individual, we cannot trust them. You know, Prophet ﷺ said, described them, you know, as in the case of where one of the evil jinn had come to Abu Huraira, and he had been caught. Abu Huraira had caught him. He was trying to take something from the zakah, and he offered him Ayatul Kursi. This is mentioned in the book, again, the exorcist tradition, as well as in the book which I translated called Ibn Taymiyyah's Essay on the Jinn. A well-known hadith. Anyway, the Prophet ﷺ described that evil jinn as saying, صَدُقَ وَهُوَ كَذُوبِ. He told the truth, but he is a compulsive liar. I mean, this is the point. The evil jinn possessing anybody, they are compulsive liars. You cannot trust what they say. So if a jinn even speaks, you know, some people go in to start to ask them about, you know, why they came into this person, when they came, what's life like in the world of the jinn. You know, and I've even read books, people have written whole books of, you know, conversations with the jinn, you know. Please, believe that this is nonsense here. You know, you cannot trust what the jinn tell you, etc. You know, try to relate that now as fact. You know, they're involved in evil. You know, as somebody who you know is a, you know, is a particularly evil person, you're not going to trust what they say. You know, you're not going to go and ask them and then use whatever answers they give you and base any kind of, you know, Islamic practice on it.
Is it possible for good jinns to help a person in some Islamic way? Apparently the questioner still wants some clarification on that. Islamically is the stress here.
As I said, if it were possible for the jinns to help Muslims in an Islamic way, then the Prophet Muhammad and his Sahaba would have been the first to have jinns helping them. And we have no record of the jinns helping them. So anybody who comes along later, centuries later, people say, oh, he was a saint. Why? Because the jinns were helping him. You know, no.
Somebody asked me to mention that Sister Farveen has tickets for tomorrow's event, so if some of the sisters are interested in that, please get it from Sister Farveen. Now, two related questions. Could you please let us know once more about the treatment according to the Sunnah about jinns? According to? Yes. And can you please continue your discussion on relevant prayers to be recited that you could not finish before?
I mean, actually, as I said before, the time that we had was limited, and really to go through it, I mean, I had a whole 3 pages of various du'as, etc., to be said at different points, you know, in the mornings, in the evenings, before sleeping. But I don't think really time would permit me to go through each and every one of them. My suggestion, as I said, is to get the book Fortification of the Muslim. You know, those of you, I mean, it's around, it's available. It's a very good collection, and most of the du'as are there. And in terms of the prophetic methodology, you know, to go back through it would be to go back through, you know, a third of the lecture which I gave before.
Is it wrong or is it a sin for a Muslim to visit a non-Muslim psychiatrist? If yes, is it wrong to become a psychiatrist or to study psychology?
The basis of psychiatry and psychology is Freudian. You know, the ideas of Freud and others are based on evolutionary ideas concerning human beings. They analyze the animals, and from animal behavior, they then look at human beings and try to interpret human beings according to how animals function. Okay, so much of what they have to offer is nonsense. Relative to human beings, much of it is nonsense. There is a portion of it which comes from observation, which is observation, for example, of child psychology, observing children and their behavioral patterns, etc., you know, the times at which they, you know, they exhibit certain patterns of behavior, etc. Having knowledge of that in terms of rearing children is useful information. Their interpretations of it, again, you have to be careful of, you know. A Muslim psychiatrist, it's like a contradiction in terms, really. If we define psychiatry in a loose sense, you know, where it has to do with, you know, helping people, the psyche, and correcting the problems of the psyche, etc., you know, perhaps we can say, yes, from an Islamic perspective, recitation of Quran, you know, some knowledge of people's behavioral patterns, you know, can help in advice, counseling of others. No harm in that sense. But psychiatry, you know, as it is known in the West, for the most part, is based on principles of kufr, disbelief, and interpreting human behavior according to the behavior of animals.
Can you shed some light on the...
Before I do that, there's one example that that comes to mind, you know, of the same, the psychologists and psychiatrists, what they do. If you ask people here in the educational system, why is it that, I mean, as I knew, when I grew up here in Toronto, I went to Jarvis in town, and I went to Northview Heights in Willowdale. In both of these schools, it's a junior high and high school, there we had to, all the boys had to go swimming naked. We had to go swimming naked. You weren't allowed to wear swimming trunks. Unless you had a doctor's letter, you know. Not your parents would not write something good enough. A doctor's letter, so meaning that you have some kind of deformity or something, you know, you need to hide yourself, right? Otherwise, you had to go swimming naked. And the showers. Why is it they don't have separate cubicles that people can go in the door behind, you know, shower and then get out? No, they have a big room with just shower heads, and everybody has to go in there stock naked. Girls separate, but girls all together stock naked, boys. Why? Why do they do this? From psychology and psychiatry. They say that the human, behavior of shyness, where people when they're naked they want to cover themselves, these type of things, they say that this is some kind of psychological, you know, imbalance. There's something wrong here. Something wrong in the psyche. Right? They're trying to correct it. Because why? Because when you look at the animals, you know, the dogs, the cats, the monkeys are not walking around trying to cover their private parts. No, they walk around, you know, just letting it all hang out, right? So this is why they want to have this nudist beach here in Toronto. This is the same psychology. The same psychology behind the same concept. That we are animals. Why should we be shy? Shyness is a psychosis. You need to be treated. So this is it's a clear example of, you know, the mentality of, you know, psychiatry and psychology, you know, this where it has led the modern society.
Can you shed some light on the dark practices of crystal ball gazers, palm readers, and fortune tellers? Do they communicate with the jinn, and if so, how?
Okay, much of fortune telling, you know, is hoax. But there is an element amongst them, whether they do it through palm reading, you know, reading the tea leaves or whatever, there's an element amongst them that are in contact with the jinn. Prophet Muhammad explained, Allah talks about it in the Quran, about some among the jinn that steal a listening from the heavens. They go up to the lowest heavens, and where the angels may be talking amongst themselves about things, instructions that they've been given by Allah to do on the earth, etc. They gain some information of what is going to happen in the future. They pass this on down to the fortune teller on the earth, and he is able to tell you something of the future. But the Prophet ﷺ said, it is one truth mixed with 100 lies. So what happens is that the fortune teller, you come to them, they give you a whole list of things. This is going to happen in your life, that's going to happen, so on, so on, so on. Then you go away. What happens is that how our brain works is that these things end up in our subconscious. We don't keep it in our conscious, we're walking around waiting for these things to happen. No, it goes in our subconscious. When one of these things happens, then we think automatically, the fortune teller told me. And then you become a propagator for the fortune. Hey, he told me the truth. He told me, you know, he told me this is going to happen, it happened. But you forgot the 99 other things he told you which didn't happen. See, this is how our brain works. When things from the subconscious are reinforced by events in our lives, you know, then that becomes a conscious memory here. But the other things which remain in the subconscious, we forget them. So this is what they operate on. So there will be an element amongst them that will be able to tell us some information about the future. Those that tell you information about yourself, which nobody else knows, You come to them, all of a sudden they're telling how old you are, you know, where you live, what is your profession, you know, your wife, the names of your children. You know, people you find doing that, obviously they're dealing with the jinn, you know, directly, again, through your qareen. Your qareen has all that information. If they're dealing with a particular jinn, they get that from that qareen and pass it on to the fortune teller and they can inform you. So any form of fortune telling, is kufr. Prophet ﷺ said, whoever goes to a fortune teller out of curiosity, their prayers are not accepted for 40 days and nights. And if they go to a fortune teller believing in what the fortune teller says, then they have disbelieved in Islam. This is the statement of Prophet ﷺ. So this means that if we open up our, you know, newspaper and we know there's a page, right, the page of the horoscope page, the signs of the zodiac telling you for Cancer and Libra, etc., you know, what's going to happen for you today, what you should do, what you shouldn't do. If you go to that page and start reading, out of curiosity, I don't believe it, I just want to see what it says, that is going to the fortune teller. That's how the fortune teller operates today. That's modern fortune telling. In the past, they didn't have newspapers, so you had to go down the block to the fortune teller, the local fortune teller, and he would run it down to you. Today, you can put it in a newspaper and you buy it, and then you're going to the fortune teller. So you have to avoid that page. Avoid reading that.
Okay, I have a page with some questions in Arabic. How does the hasaful jinn ila shakl al insan? Can the jinn realize the human shape, or come in the shape of a human being?
Age is possible.
How yumkin at-takallum ma'al jinn? Is it possible to converse with the jinn? And hal al-jinnu yatahakkaku shaklahum in al-qiyama? Yatahawalu shaklahum in al-qiyama? How will the jinn realize the shape on the Day of Judgment? And hal lahum jannatuhum wa jahannamahum? Do they have a separate Jannah and Jahannam, or are they going to dwell with the human beings?
So we have enough texts from the Quran, etc., which indicate that for the jinn, I mean, there's just one heaven and hell. There's not a jinn heaven for human beings and a heaven for the jinn. And in terms of what form they will take on the Day of Judgment, they will take the form that Allah has determined for them. We're not at liberty to describe, we don't know what they look like in the first place. You know, we're not at liberty to try to describe what they're going to look like on the Day of Judgment.
Now, I have more than one question about sleeping. If a person is sleepwalking, does that have anything to do with jinn or craziness? And if a person talks or laughs during the sleep, does that have anything to do? Yes?
Okay. Well, that's a repeated question. Sleepwalking, again, of course, has nothing to do with the jinn. It's a phenomenon which, you know, people experience in various parts of the world. I mean, there's no particular evil connected with it, just like talking in the sleep.
Now it is getting a bit late, and sometime we have to bring this to a close. I have some questions for myself, which I have not entertained tonight, because you can always ask me later. But I've concentrated on the questions for Dr. Phillips, because he'll be flying out, inshallah, on Wednesday morning. So let me invite you to come out tomorrow night to hear him some more at Glen Forest Secondary School in Mississauga. And on Tuesday night to hear the sister who will be speaking on companionship at the Dawah Center. Please come out for that program as well. Anything else you'd like to add? One last word? Anything final?
Well, just, you know, with regards to the whole topic of jinn possession, again, and just to reiterate that what our responsibility is not to become so fearful where, you know, every sound we hear, everything which seems out of place, you know, becomes a jinn. Anything we've lost or some jinn has stolen it, you know. We try to avoid trying to put the jinn to explain everything that happens in our lives. We should try to continue to live lives, normal lives, lives based on trust in Allah, you know, doing what Allah has commanded us, etc. And we utilize whatever du'as and practices Prophet ﷺ offered us to protect ourselves. And if we are tried, we're given some form of trial by the jinn, you know, through them affecting our lives, then we have to try to be patient with it, trusting in Allah that this is a test from us. And in our patience, Allah rewards us and removes from us our sin.
Here was one last one. Just very quickly, a brother is very concerned that he wakes up in the morning and he finds 3 scratches on his legs. he's wondering about that because there's no reason why he could have got those scratches from his bed. How do you interpret that?
A cap under his bed. No, actually, I can't really say, you know, I'm not at liberty to say, this is not anything that I've come across where people say, you know, one of the signs to know that there's a jinn in your house is you receive three scratches on your legs. No, I would just say if you've been scratched, you know, get a band-aid, put it over it, you know, utilize whatever the Prophet ﷺ gave us of du'as, read Surah Al-Baqarah in your home. As Prophet ﷺ said, if you want to read Surah Al-Baqarah in the home, the evil jinn will not come there for some 3 days and nights. So we utilize the things that the Prophet ﷺ gave us, and inshallah we will be protected.
Yeah, just one final thing. Dr. Phillips will also be speaking on Tuesday night at the Hamilton Mosque on Stone Church Road. That's the mosque in Hamilton, Stone Church Road. So finally, I'd like to thank you all, brothers and sisters, for your patience listening and for your cooperation with us. I know we had a hard evening in some sense because the overcrowding was difficult to deal with. But you were patient. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala reward you. Thank you also for your donations. And if you have offered something in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, may Allah reward you. If you haven't yet, then there's still some time to do that on your way out. Yes?